Step out of the shadows and into your sunshine. For generations, we have been limited by what society, colleagues, family members, spouses, and friends think that we should be or become. Slowly, we are molded into their best version of us. One day, we look in the mirror and wonder how we became so far removed from our inner light. These are the stories of powerful women and men who broke their chains and embraced their true purpose. They authentically share their most vulnerable moments and how they found the strength to step into their sunshine. Join us as we share our journeys toward breaking the chain of societal expectations for women and men around the globe. Step into a world of enchantment at La Forêt des Lumières, where magic meets mindfulness in the heart of Brittany, France. Unwind with immersive workshops led by master practitioners, offering transformative practices to elevate your well-being. Embark on a transformative journey through lush forests and tranquil ponds, where every moment is exciting. Celebration of holistic living. Discover how to regain your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual power to take back your life. Join us at La Forêt des Lumières and awaken your senses to a world of possibility where every moment is an invitation to thrive. Visit www.rachelcoudronevents.com for more information. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to season three of Step Into Your Sunshine, hosted by yours truly, Rachel Coudron, the owner of Etsy Boutique Coudron's Curiosities and the CEO and mind behind La Forêt des Lumières Holistic Experience that will be taking place in May of 2025. If that is your vibe, go and check out my website at www.rachelcoudronevents.com. Today, I have a very special kick-ass woman with me, and I would love for her to introduce herself.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much, Rachel. Fabulous introduction. My name is Gulshan Bano, or Gully, as everybody knows me, and I am owner, and I'm going to be the CEO of Strike Back Self Defense for Women. I like that word, Rachel, CEO. I'm going to use that a bit more often. I used to say owner, but CEO, Strike Back Self Defense for Women. Which is a women's only self defense school. And what we do is teach women and girls globally how to protect themselves using easy to learn self-defense skills.
Oh, I can't wait to dive into that because that is so important. And am very excited to know what brought you to that and why you have chosen to go down that field and that path. So today we'll start at the very beginning. What were some of the defining moments in your life that shaped who you are?
So my background is, and for those that do know me and those that don't, I'm a pharmacist. So my background is I'm a pharmacist. I don't know if you knew that, Rachel.
I didn't.
Oh, did you not know that? So I qualified as a pharmacist over 24 years ago. So 2020, I qualified. No, 2000, I qualified as a pharmacist. So I've been a pharmacist 24 years. I originally started as a medical student. The only thing I ever wanted to do growing up was be a doctor. So I wanted to be a paediatrician. I loved children. I was sort of wanted to be this sort of amazing doctor that looked after children. So I was a straight A student all the way through school, straight A's, GCSE, straight A's in A levels. Got fabulous place at medical school, training to be a doctor. And somewhere in between sort of second year and third year, I had this sort of moment where I thought, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, much to my parents' dismay. Because it was the only thing I ever wanted to do. And it was my clear focus. I had such a laser vision focus that this is what I want to do. And that never faltered until I got to medical school. So I was at medical school in Cardiff, University of Wales College of Medicine. And I studied everything I sort of thought this was going to be, it wasn't. And I sort of started thinking, okay, there's got to, my life was literally, if there were 24 hours in a day, 23 of those I was sort of studying, and It's a tough call. One thing I'd say is you don't need to be particularly clever to be a doctor. You just need to have a phenomenal memory. And that's what it is. It's a very memory game. And I came across sort of my fellow students who were probably a lot on the spectrum. So their memories were phenomenal. And I'd look around thinking, I don't know if I'd want you by my bedside to be a doctor. Whereas my sort of, I am naturally empathic and sort of leaning into people's sort of worries and things. I suddenly found myself where I don't know if I still want to be doing this. There's got to be something else I want to do. So I came home and spoke to my dad, and it was obvious I wasn't happy doing what I was doing. And he said to me, "Look, you've got 3 years," because we used to get grants back then where they paid for your degree. So you've got 3 years of money saved up to do something. What else do you want to do? And my dad was amazing because he always said to me, he goes, "Look, whatever job you do, it's ultimately a way to pay the bills. You've got to have a life outside it. And if you're spending 23 out of 24 hours a day now just doing this, you have no life." And it doesn't get better because it's just the life of more and more exams. And as we know now, when we look at the NHS here in the UK, it is just exams and more exams and hours and hours. So I flipped sides and then applied to be a pharmacist, which sort of was still in keeping with what I was doing, but had less hours and gave me a bit more of a life back. So that's how the story went from medicine into pharmacy. I then qualified as a pharmacist, became a pharmacist, and loved what I do. I love my patients. I love the time I had with my patients. I love that sort of person-to-person interaction. And over the years, pharmacy, again, like most things, has become it's very company driven by the figures and the stats. And that patient focus was beginning to lose. So you were timed how long you had with a patient, all of those things. But for sort of fast forward, stayed where I was, being a pharmacist. And unfortunately, during sort of my work as a pharmacist, so those that don't know me, I'm a petite woman. I'm 5 foot. I'm a very sort of slight, small woman. I was attacked a number of times as a pharmacist. I was very naive. Nowhere near the person I am now. I was an extremely naive young girl, thinking the world was amazing and everybody was amazing and nobody ever did anybody any harm, and possibly put myself in situations that now looking back, I'd be like, yeah, I'd never do that one again. Sort of like walking back late at night or where I'd park my car. And unfortunately, I ended up being attacked a number of times. And every time something happened, my sort of figure and my vision was that something's going to happen one of these days, and I'm not going to be so lucky. So that was always at the back of my mind. I need to find a way that I'm going to keep safe or protect myself. And then fast forward, I had so I was living. We were living in Manchester at the time. Fast forward, we moved to the Midlands where my mum is. My dad had passed away, and I had my two children, my two boys. And one of the instances, we were out one day, and something happened while we were out with the two boys that made me suddenly that mum moment where you're like, okay, up to now, it's always been me on my own when something has happened, but now I'm with my children. And if something happened while I'm out with my kids, would I be able to keep them safe? So it wasn't only about me being me safe now, it was about keeping them safe. And that was a real moment where I thought it made me sort of stand back and have a look at how safe am I right now? So we were at a place where so I'm a Muslim woman. Islamophobic attacks were on the rise in the UK. It was just not a great time to be a visibly. So I used to wear a hijab, you know, to be a visible Muslim woman wearing a hijab. It wasn't a great space, a great place to be. So I started looking for somewhere that I could stay safe and you know, find somewhere. But I was on the wrong side of 40. I needed something which. Or getting towards 40, where I didn't have years and years of being able to train. I needed something that was going to be quick and work. And I came across what I teach now, which is Krav Maga self-defense. And literally from that first session, it was a life-changing. It was literally, okay, I can do this. I don't need years of training. I need years of training to get really good at it. But right now, what I've learned, I can use this immediately. That's where it started. I started learning Krav Maga at one of my local schools here, and started training. And I loved it. I fell in love with what I was doing. It got me fitter. And sort of around this time, just before having my second little boy, so they're both much older now. So we're going back about 13 years. I got diagnosed with cancer. So it was a real pivotal kind of. So when you talk about those life-changing moments, Rachel, there's a lot of them. So it was. I got diagnosed with cancer. It's not a story many people know, but it was a rare form of non-Hodgkin's. And I was pregnant at the time with my diagnosis with my youngest. And I was given some choices about going down the chemo route and potentially losing the baby. And as a pharmacist at the time and knowing all the things that I know, I sort of made some decisions at that point that I wasn't going to have chemo. I was going to have a look, complete look at my lifestyle. So these two things sort of happened at the same time, finding Crab, being pregnant, getting diagnosed. And my lifestyle probably wasn't great, as for many, I'm eating on the run. I was doing long hours as a pharmacist. So I peeled everything back, went right back to the basics, sort of went completely clean living. My diet wasn't great, I'll be honest. It was a lot of sugar. I drank Coke like there was going to be no Coke tomorrow left. So Diet Coke was my beverage of choice, like literally a lot of it. And I thought, I'm not doing great here. And if I'm going to go clean living, I need to strip everything back. So I did. I ripped everything back. We went. So, I mean, we're very positive. Both me and hubby are very, very positive people. We've always been, we do look on the bright side of everything. We always think of positive thinking. And I'm a real believer in fate, that what is meant to be for you is meant to be for you. You can't change that. What you can do is just your influence on how you look at things. So we came home after the diagnosis and sort of decided, right, we can either let this rule us forever or we live with it and see what can we do. And he was amazing. He was like, look, this is your field. You're a pharmacist. You know what goes on here. I'm going to let you make the choices that you think are right for you. And he was brilliant at that. And I thought, right now I'm pregnant. I don't want to have chemo. I don't want to have radiotherapy. What I need to do is see what the best I can do for myself and my baby. So I decided not to have the chemo route, and the prognosis wasn't great. It was a terminal diagnosis in the sense that if we did have chemo, we had two shots at chemo, and after that, we were out of options unless we had a stem cell transplant. And I was really wary about using those options up too quickly. So the first run of chemo would have given us a couple of years of respite, and the second one possibly a year. And then we were into stem cell territory. And with my sort of ethnic background, a stem cell match back then, so we go about 13 years ago, was quite a rare find. So I thought, I'm going to play with how I feel. And I felt well. I didn't feel like I particularly wanted to put myself under chemo for this sort of time. So I sort of started doing Crab and doing all of that and getting fitter and also looking at what my lifestyle choices were. And don't get me wrong, there were times where I was so poorly with chest infections. I had no immune system through this non-Hodgkin's. My immune system was just gone completely. But we sort of fought back with being fitter and doing sort of lots of things that I was doing. Got fitter and fitter. And every time I'd go back with the oncology team, they'd be like, okay, your bloods are looking pretty good. Just keep doing what you're doing. And they couldn't explain it either. So I had my little one and here we are. So fast forward, here we are 13 years later. Still here, officially in remission, having had no chemo and having had no radiotherapy. And when I speak to people about this, Rachel, a lot of people say, like, what was it? And I don't know. It was a combination of a lot of things. I think your mental state and how you think, your positivity makes a huge amount. I'm a huge believer on what you think and how your mental state is affects how your body reacts. Hugely believe in that. Whether that's cortisol, whether it's the stress hormones, whatever it is. And we made that decision that we were not going to let this rule us. And also actively taking part. So I did a lot of things like cupping therapy. I looked at a lot of alternatives that were not conventional, which for a pharmacist is quite going the opposite way. I was determined not to go down the medical route. Yes, I was a pharmacist and I understood how it worked, but I didn't want that for myself right there. And I'm just going to add a disclaimer. This isn't for everybody. This was my personal decision, and it was something I took on to say, I take full ownership and responsibility for this. And at no point would I ever say to anybody, go against what your doctors or your consultants are, sort of thing. But for me, they weren't happy, but they were like, okay, you're going to go the way you want to go. And anyway, here we are 13 years later, officially in remission. They can't explain it. They don't know how. They don't know why. I'm considered one of those amazing miracles that just happened to work. But I think it was a lot of prayers, Rachel. I have faith and I am a Muslim and I have a lot of faith. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot of prayers. There were a lot of tears and a lot of prayers involved. A lot of deals going on between me and the Lord above saying, well, give me a couple more years in my boys, because my eldest was two by then, and all I could see was, You are giving me a terminal diagnosis with a baby that hasn't even been born yet and a 2-year-old. That just doesn't work in my world. That isn't even a factor. That's not going to happen. So I was gut determined that this wasn't going to happen. So I guess that was a real sort of pivotal moment. And now I was doing Crab and I was getting fitter and my asthma had gone and I was so much fitter than I'd ever been in my life before. And the more I did this and the fitter I got, the better my results got as well. And on this journey of getting fitter, I qualified as a hijama therapist, a cupping therapist, because it worked so well for me. And I came across some amazing women that I treated. So still in the pharmacy world and the hijama world, sort of fertility, MS patients, and this cupping therapy worked really well for them. And while we'd be talking about what else I was doing. I was saying, I was doing this Crav and it was keeping me safe. And women were really interested. And I came across so many women that would say to me, "Oh, do you know what? This happened to me, or this had happened to me, or I was attacked, or this happened to me. I'd love to learn what you're learning, but I don't want to go because whether it's trauma reasons or religious reasons or cultural reasons, I don't want to go and learn in a mixed club or with men or a male instructor. Will you teach me something?" And again, that was one of those real moments where I thought, all these women, and that cliche, every woman you know or somebody she knows, these were all these women saying, "This happened to me," or "Something had happened to me, and I wish I knew how to protect myself. Would you teach me?" And that was that moment where there's nobody teaching these women. The very women that need a safe space, there's nowhere for them to go. So I then took a decision to train as an instructor, qualify as an instructor. It was a tough run to qualify and open up my school, Strike Back Self-Defense, where it would be an all-inclusive space for every woman, female that wants to learn in an all-female safe space to come and share stories, to come and heal, to come and be comfortable where you're not judged. And this was really pivotal, especially for teenage girls, where nobody's judging you. You can be anybody you want in that room, but you walk away with a sense of confidence and empowerment that you've just not had up till now. And that's what we became. We became the place to go for women's self-defense. So that is, in a nutshell, the pivotal moments.
Wow, Goli. Oh my goodness. You've had such a life and so many experiences. That is absolutely incredible. And then, I mean, all of my listeners, you can't see her, but she has a glowing face, big smile, and sparkling eyes looking back at me on Zoom right now. And that is incredible. Your journey is just wow. And I have one of my very good friends is also a pharmacist. So I was like, and I'm thinking, like, knowing her and knowing about stats and statistics and how her mind works, I'm thinking, like, someone like her choosing to go literally against, like, the medical side of
Advisement.
things and advancements and in regards to cancer. I'm like, wow, because that must have been such a shock to not to like yourself and to all of your colleagues and people who grew up with you were just like, no, I'm not going to down that route.
Do you know what? I don't know if some of it was denial, Rachel, because I was like, okay, this isn't happening. It is happening, but it's not happening. And I cannot do chemo. I'm not, I obviously I was pregnant at the time. And for me, so my youngest who I was pregnant with, Issa, I call him my miracle baby because if it hadn't been for him, we probably wouldn't have got the diagnosis. It was a series of coincidences that I was pregnant with him without realizing I was pregnant. We were 9 weeks. I was nine, and I'm a pharmacist, and I didn't even get the signs. So I was 9 weeks pregnant when I realised that so I was pregnant. And on the day my bloods went in to be, for iron levels, etc., there just happened to be an oncologist on the ward doing bloods that just picked up something that nobody else would have picked up. It was such a series of coincidences. And I was still, when I got the phone call, they were asking me to come in. So I had multiple phone calls on that day. And I ignored all of them because I thought it was just my doctor saying my iron levels were low. But they had a team on standby because my neutrophil count was literally below half. It's normally way, way above. But there, when I came, anyway, by the time I got home, I had my GP literally at the door saying, they're waiting for you. There's a team waiting for you tomorrow morning. They need to see you because you are so poorly right now. And I was like, I feel fine. I'm looking good. Literally, it was suddenly it this overnight. So,
Wow.
and she, I remember saying to me, just don't Google anything. Just don't Google anything. Just get there tomorrow morning. And when I got there, they were like, we've been getting trying to get hold of you all day. Where have you been? And suddenly it dawned on me, okay, this is a little bit more serious than a low iron level. And they were saying all these things. And even as a pharmacist, none of it made sense because I felt so well. And then when they realized I was a pharmacist, they were like, you can't go back to work as a pharmacist. You know, obviously you're working in an environment where poorly people are coming in or patients are coming in. You will literally die. You've got no immune system right now. So, and the only way they let me back out that ward was, so they wanted to put me in isolation and put me on IV antibiotics and everything straight away. And I was like, I've got to go and pick up my little one from nursery in 3 hours. Literally. And I walked out saying, no, I need some time to sort of stress. And they were like, we need you to stay. And I was like, and the only way they let me out was I promised I wasn't going to go back into work that week until we'd had some more sort of tests and things. But in my head, you know, where you're going, no, this is happening. I think there was a lot of that going on. But it was, I need to take ownership of what I'm doing here. I just couldn't let somebody else make those decisions of what was right for me. And I guess that was a real turning point in life.
This is something I feel very connected with, and where I haven't been diagnosed at any point in my life with cancer, and neither has my mother. But throughout my health journey and my mom's health journey over the last 14 months, I have realized the power of what you said, where you're actively taking a part in your health. And so many people give that power to somebody else, give it to doctors, give it to pharmacists, give it to therapists, all those things. It's like, you're the only person that can heal me. You're the only person that has information that can heal me. And that is so dangerous. I've seen it so many times where in statistics, it shows like if you're given a terminal diagnosis and you said like, okay, well, you basically have 3 months to live. Statistically, most people live up to exactly that amount of time that you have. You were told January, 3 months to live, February, March, April, you've passed by April. And the reason that I believe, and what statistics says, is because the power of your mind, that you really, when somebody tells you that, and you have given all of your power to them, and you believe that they have the most information and that they're dictating, your future, then it's like, oh, well, okay, they said that that's the case. I gotta tell my body, my mind, my perception, my family, my children, all of these things, because I need to make all these quick decisions or go like bucket list trip because I don't have much left. And on a different note, that I'm going to share a story with you that was very emotional for me and reminds me along your story, reminds me of your story. When my mom is still in rehab in the hospital, but on the more severe side over the last 14 months when she wasn't responsive, and hours and hours I would spend at her bedside, no, like her body getting weaker, more fragile, more muscle atrophy, all of those types of things. I remember reading Tony Robbins and The Power of Your Mind, and that if you can visualize and put yourself visually in that space, your mind is not capable of differentiating between what's real and not real. It just is. And so every day I would tell my mom, we had a planned trip to Hawaii, that she would feel like the sand between her toes, the heat on her
Amazing.
skin. She'd be able to smell the salt in the air from the sea. She would feel like the sun warming her skin, be able to see her granddaughter playing and frolicking in the waves, and be able to wear a swimsuit, finally be warm and eat at seaside restaurants. I would go into like really
Amazing.
incredible details. And the reason I shared this with you, just to back up your story, is when my mom came home for a brief moment to Oklahoma in January, and I was there. And we were talking about if she was going to go to Hawaii or not. She told me, Well, Rachel, of course I have to go because I have to feel the sand in my toes. I have to feel the heat on my skin. And quite literally, she said everything that I had said to her for months. And it, like, I was crying at the end of it. I still get like a goosebumps thinking about it because it really is so important, the power of people's minds, and that you're advocating that through your cancer story and other stories within your life. It's just so important for people to hear because so many people have experienced trauma and hardship in their life, and they think that they don't have any power left. And they don't think that they can make a difference in their life. They don't think that they can turn it around. They don't think that they can make an impact. And so their thoughts begin to create this reality. And those that choose to live differently, those that choose to say, just like you, the power, no, this is not going to be my life. I'm not going to go down this path. This isn't even a possibility that I'll entertain with my mind or my thoughts or my actions. Then it's like your mind quite literally pushes those possibilities out and it's like, no, we're focused here. We got things to do, people to see, things to accomplish. And I think that's just such an important message to share with the world.
Hugely. I think you're, and whether, so some people call it woo-woo, some people call it manifestation, whatever you want to call it, your mind is so powerful. It is so powerful. In my head at that time, I'm going to see my children grow up into teens. It's as simple as that. There is just no way that is not happening. I mean, Zach, so Issa wasn't even born at the time, and Zach was only two. And in my head, I was like, no, I've got to be there. Who's going to be there as their mum when they're sitting their GCSEs and they're going to prom and they're doing all of, none of that was negotiable. And I am so, I can't emphasize that enough, that none of those were negotiable to me. That you are not telling me that I am not going to be there for those key moments ever. And like, you know, again, whether it's that manifestation or it's weird, whatever you want to call it, for me, it was, I was making deals. I was making deals with everybody that was listening. Like, give me till Lydia, I'm going to do that. I want to be there. And the thought that my babies were going to grow up without a mum was just so not going to happen, Rachel. I can't even begin to tell you. And it's probably one of the most determined things I've ever been in that space in my life, that this was not happening. This was a non-negotiable. Nobody was ever going to take that away from me. So yeah, the power of your mind, it is, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And I am living proof of that. And so I've been officially in remission. I was discharged from my hospital last January. Was it last January? Last January. And they were literally, and I speak to my, and I know them really well, and we're good friends because I've been with them for so long, but they're like, we don't know. We have no answers. You are one of our miracle stories that we are so grateful for, but we don't know. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay you don't know because it's taken me to where I am right now. So
Yes. Oh my goodness. That gives me chills. And I just think, what an incredible honor to have you here with us on
honestly,
the
and
show.
I, do you know what?
But
In yeah, it is, and it's very, it is, of course, it's emotional. It's very emotional. So my eldest Zach is sitting his GCSE this year. He's 16. Issa is 30, and Issa will always be. Me and Issa have got a very special bond. He's always been my. He's my miracle baby, and we do share a very special bond. And he did save my life that day by becoming a thing that because of him, I was. So without that, I don't know where the story would have been, where we would have been. And your children do give you that strength, Rachel. Without that, as you have, that gives you that strength that, and any woman and anybody, you know, who's got where they're in that mom mode or whatever you call it, you will do everything and go to the nth degree. Because you need know you're going to be there for your kids. So yeah, that
oh, absolutely. I mean, in a totally different realm, but a similar type of determination existed within me when I moved to France. Everything in my life changed. And everything that I knew prior to that moment was vanished instantaneously. I had no ability to take care of things on my own. I didn't have the language capacity either. And after I moved to France, I actually fell into depression because I just all the parts of me were gone. Like everything that I knew that defined me up to that
Yeah.
moment were just no longer there. And it was my daughter who really gave me the strength to recover and to get out of that state. And I think without being pregnant, things would have gotten so tremendously worse.
Worse.
And when she did arrive, that was by far the happiest, most exciting moment of my life. And it gave me purpose again.
Yeah.
Like, now I have a purpose of taking care of my daughter, being a mother, and all of those things. And I think when you talk about that, you're willing to go to the deepest levels possible to protect your children or to be with them or to represent them or to take care of them. I mean, it's like innately ingrained in you that you will do whatever it takes. So
Absolutely.
like risking your life included,
Yeah.
to protect your children. And that is that kind of, at least for me, from my perspective, that kind of motherly love that comes with the
Yeah.
children instantaneously. You see them and it's like, there's nothing I wouldn't do for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So much so. So I want to go into another part of your story. And so you had mentioned that in your past, before your strike back company, that you were attacked several times. And I believe, and you know as well, that that's a story that exists for many women, or they have a severe fear of being attacked. And I know for me, why I have never personally been what I would, in my definition of attacked, I was raised in kind of a fearful environment where something could always happen to me at any moment, and I was never safe.
Right.
And so with that, I know that I've now carried that into adulthood of where like being alone makes me feel unsafe.
Really? Okay,
And
it's interesting.
yeah, and so like when I'm traveling alone, when I'm like walking to my car alone, I definitely feel unsafe. And so I think there's many women
Yeah.
that can relate to me and my experiences. And what do you have to say to them?
That's really interesting. So I guess I grew up very well protected. So I had an amazing family. I had an older brother. My dad was just the most amazing advocate for women. And my dad instilled in me, you can do anything. You are so so a really quick flashback. So I had scoliosis. I was diagnosed with scoliosis when I was much younger, and I went through, so before the cancer diagnosis, I had lots of spinal surgeries. And I have a metal bar in my back, so all the way down my spine, fused into my spine because my spine was curving. I was re actually very poorly as a younger child, so going up to teen years. And so I have this metal bar in my back, all the way running down my spine. And my dad used to call me Superwoman back then, Supergirl, and he was like, "You're Supergirl, you can do anything." And he instilled both in me and my sister. And this is going from a cultural place where, even that many years ago, so I'm 51 now, so going back sort of 40 years, Rach, culturally it was very unusual to have a male role model that was so positive for or as an advocate for women. And my dad was amazing at that. He was like, "My daughter's gonna do it." He was like, "If you want to run the world, Gulchen, you can run the world. Nothing will ever, you are the most powerful girl. Nothing will ever stop you." So I grew up with this kind of real confidence that I was infallible. Nothing could touch me, which is quite naive as well, because I went from being in this awfully safe environment where my dad dropped me off and picked me up and did all the amazing things that parents do, to suddenly being out in the world at uni and work where I was on my own. And I was so unaware of dangers around me that I believe, as I'd grown up in such a lovely environment, everybody was nice and everybody was lovely and everybody was great and nothing bad ever happened. It was very, very naive, partly because it was such a protected environment I grew up in. So when I was, so my, a couple of things that happened, it was a drug addict. It was somebody following back to my car park, to the car park one day after work. All in places where, as a woman, I was clearly very vulnerable. So I'm 5 foot, but for me, in my head, I'm 7 foot. So I walk with in my head, I'm walking as a 7 foot woman who's not vulnerable at all. And it's funny how we go full circle to what I do now. But even back in those days, in my head, I didn't see myself as anything could ever happen. So when
Right.
these things did happen, I was like, oh, why did that happen though? And I was working in some real rough spots of the UK. I was working in sort of Liverpool behind bulletproof glass, where, you know, it was a real
Wow.
tough parts of the country. I was working in sort of very sort of northern sort of England, where it was rough. And I was probably taking risks and parking my car and going back in the dark and totally unaware of what I was setting myself up for. Now, not putting any this, none of it was my fault, absolutely none of it was, but me not being aware of my surroundings contributed a lot to putting myself in those places. So when these things happened, it was a real shock to my system that why did that just happen? But now, knowing what I know now and looking back, so I guess when I teach women, and that's what I do now, my first thing would always be, don't live from a place of fear. You don't need to be fearful. All you need is some basic knowledge. And this is why what we're doing now is so important, Rachel, to give women the skills to be able to live from a place of strength, not from a place of fear. You shouldn't be fearful. No woman needs to be fearful or should be fearful. We are half the planet. Why are we not allowed to take up space in that planet? Why do we live in a space of fear or a place of fear? And that fear often, and correct me if it's wrong, will come from men who put that fear in women because men know what other men are capable of. 100%. It's very rare a woman will ask you to live from a place of fear. It'll be, or a woman who's been through trauma or had something happen that, but it's usually men, and it's usually will be dads and brothers. And I've got so many stories of my younger girls and some of the things their parents say to them that make them fearful. But that's because they know what their gender is capable of. And that's a problem. For me, when I teach women, I say to women is don't live in a place of fear. I mean, I travel globally now, as you know, with the work that I do, and I've traveled through some of the roughest airports, or, you know, done all of it on my own. But not from a place of fear, but from a place of knowledge where, okay, I know if something happened, I could look after myself. And if I wasn't, I wouldn't be able to do what I do now if I lived from a place of fear. Fear clips your wings. We should be allowed to travel. We should be allowed to explore the world. We should be allowed to go backpack wherever we want, through where. What stops us is, yes, there are people out there that aren't necessarily have our best interests. But know how to look after yourself. Know how to, knowing and just having the empowerment that I can take care of myself goes a long way to keeping you safe anyway. You walk differently, you look different, everything changes. It's a game changer. When I get women right now coming into my classes and workshops, even if I have them for a couple of hours, I know when they walk out, Rachel, they walk out as different women. There's a different thing about them, there is something completely different about them. And that opens up the world. And one of my biggest sort of groups that I teach are teenage girls. And it's because I never want those teenage girls to grow up from a place where they fear having, and the world's opportunities are taken away from them because they're fearful. That's not how we need to, that we shouldn't be living like that ever.
Gosh, and I can feel your passion, like filling your voice, feeling the podcast, this episode. Yeah, I mean, I can feel it just emanating from you that you're just like, this is my purpose in life to share this message and to help women be able to live their best lives and approach life from a place of strength. And I can tell you my story, and it's not from a place of strength. And just like you mentioned, which I thought was pretty shocking, that you said that, like, brothers or fathers, grandparents instill this kind of fear. And for me, that's what happened. It was my dad always made me feel like I was always vulnerable. No matter the situation, no matter where I was, no matter who I was with, no matter if it was daytime and like night, if I was by myself, then I was vulnerable. And this was drilled into my head for decades. And I mean, my dad would take it a step further than I may say many dads, and put me in situations, well, not necessarily put me in situations, but I would be in situations where he would like reconfirm that this is dangerous, that this is that you are vulnerable.
Right.
and that you're
So
not being aware enough.
I guess he was, and when parents do say these things, they're doing it from a place, or when people who look after us and say these things, they're doing it from a place because they feel that they are looking after our safety. Now, I grew up again, so I grew up culturally where my brother went and did kung fu and karate, and he was a black belt because it was always seen as, oh, he'll be the one that's going to be vulnerable because he's going to be in a fight, or boys fight, so that's where you want to be. And as a woman, my safety was like, oh, but you're never going to be in that position because my parents were always so protective, and we're always going to be there to look after you. And my take on this is, turn the situation around. You are not going to be, your guardians are not always going to be there to look after yourself. They need to give you the tools so you can look after yourself. And that's what we should be doing. That's what we need to change. We need to give women and girls and young girls the tools that they can look after themselves. Not so, even culturally. So I'm going to disclose something. Culturally, things like sexual attacks and rapes and things, and this is honestly putting everything on the boat, becomes a blame game, and the woman is always to blame. So I'm going to talk from my culture, from a sort of an Indian or a Pakistani heritage or a South Asian heritage. If you are attacked or you were sexually assaulted or something happens, the woman is to blame because she put herself in that position. And that place of fear is instilled in a woman from a very, very young age, from parents and from brothers and dads and uncles, that you must not ever be in that place because if it, you're the one to blame because you ended up in that situation. Now, obviously, we know that is wrong, but this creates generations and generations of people telling girls that you are not safe, this will happen, and it will be because you didn't listen or you were, and that creates that place from fear. What our mission is to change that and to say, go from a place of strength. We're going to give you the tools so you are not in that place. Do bad things happen? Unfortunately, Rachel, they do. We live in a world where bad things do happen, but they can happen to anybody. But to have what, whenever bad things have happened to me, I've been on my own. My dad has, my dad, bless him, has passed away now, but my brother, my uncle, my husband, nobody has been there to keep me safe. The only person that was there to keep me safe was me. So why do I not have the tools to keep me safe? We teach our children the Green Cross Code. Not after they've been in a car accident, but as a preventative, so they know what to do if a situation arises. We teach our children how to swim. So if they end up in water, they know how to survive. We don't wait till they've had a drowning accident. So for me, this is the same. Why are half the planet not taught these skills that are preventative, that prevent these things from happening? The statistics on violence against women and gender-based violence are the way they are right now, at pandemic levels, because women simply don't have the tools or the knowledge how to stay safe. And the knowledge and the tools are very simple. It doesn't take years of training. It's very, very, very simple. But God, when you have those tools, it changes everything. And this is why this is important, to stop living from a place of fear, to say, okay, if you lack knowledge in something, Rach, what do? You go and educate yourself. Like, okay, I don't know about this. What am I going to do? How do I empower myself so I know? And this is no difference. Self-defense, or being able to keep yourself safe, has become this real, excuse my language, BS that men have fed us, that it's so tough to do that you can't do it. Women can't do it because you're too fragile, you're too weak, you're not able to do it. And it is so wrong. And who feeds us this? Men. And it's wrong, and it isn't. We can do it. I'm 5 foot, 7.5 stone, 45 kilos. I have protected myself. I've fought off muggers in Paris on my own. I have looked after myself walking through night through New York, Times Square, when I've been followed. To every woman out there listening, you can look after yourself. Stop listening to people that tell you can't. You can, and it's a very simple way to do it. And you do not need to do 10 or 15 years of whatever it is, martial arts you've been fed that you do. It's very simple. The tools to self-defense and being able to empower yourself and look after yourself are so simple that every woman on this planet should have them. And
I
that's
just want to give you a
my
round of applause. That was fabulous. I feel all of that is so important. And me having a daughter, I feel that to my bones. That is just so important. And for me, I really want to be conscientious about the message I'm sending her, because I know the message that I grew up with and the message that was handed down to me. And I don't want it to be the same for her. And I want her to be able to have the skills to like you said, defend herself if a situation arises, and for her to feel confident in taking risk. And I mean, not like unnecessary risk, but like risk like going and traveling on her own if she wants to, or walking home or being out like in the evening, maybe not like 3 in the morning, but like in the
It's
evening.
just being,
And
So one thing I said, you're young, how old is she, right? She's three?
no, she's almost 5.
She's almost five. Okay. Tell me, as a 5-year-old, does anything hold her back? Does she speak her mind? Does she say what she wants? Accept how she wants? Nothing contains her, right?
Not really, no, nothing contains her.
And this is the thing, as girls, as young girls, and anybody who's got a young daughter will know, they are feisty, they are sassy, they have no limits. We place limits. Society places limits on girls and women as they get older, that you cannot do this, you're not able to do this, you're weak, you're fragile, this will happen. And that conditioning by society is the problem. Because young girls, when they're born, they don't have that problem. It's us telling them and giving them that information. And that needs to stop.
Really, I couldn't have said it any better.
You are allowed to take up your space on this planet. You were born and you are allowed to take that space. Don't make yourself smaller. And that's the information we need to give to women and girls. Don't make yourself smaller to accommodate all the other people around you that are giving you that information. You were not born to be small. You were not born to be where your voice is. And I say this from a place where I teach in women's DV shelters. And one of the things we teach in our self-defense sessions and workshops is being able to use your voice. Now, you'll be a testament, Rachel. Does your daughter have a problem using her voice?
No, she
No,
doesn't.
right? Totally. But then why do I have women in shelters and in places where I teach that? And it's really emotional because I see these women, and using their voice is the toughest thing they have. Just being able to put a boundary up and say no, or to say, oh, I'm not happy with this, or I don't want you to do this. That's the toughest thing for them. Being able to kick or punch or do all the other things, that's not the tough bit. The tough bit is the voice, because society has conditioned and quietened them down to the point where even that absolute basic human right we have to use our voice, that every young girl has, it's conditioned out of you.
It is. That is so true. That absolutely. And establishing boundaries, using your voice, those types of things is because, oh, you need to quiet down, no screaming, you do what you're told, those types of things. Like, you're not really allowed to share or have those opinions. And so they're suppressed. So then when somebody says, well, now you need to use your voice and really like, establish a boundary, establish how you feel. It feels all kinds of uncomfortable and unknown.
So gender-based roles, we look at those. When was the last time anybody tells boys, you can't use your voice, you need to quieten down? When boys are shout and they're play fighting and they're doing all the things, what do we say? Oh, they're just boys, that's what they do. Or that's what boys do, or they're being loud because they're boys. But yet we tell our daughters to quieten down. And these are the changes that need to happen. Because when I talk to those women in those shelters, they say to me, if I had been taught this 20 years ago or 30 years ago, my life would have been different.
Absolutely.
And that's where, for the next year, and this is why what we're doing now, and Rachel, what we're doing is so important. There need to be generational changes. So this generation of girls that I teach now will not become that generation of women in those DV shelters, ever, ever. And it's so
Yes.
important.
It is. It so is important. And because I can tell you, coming from the living in more of a fear-based approach to being alone, traveling alone. And I mean, because every time I come to the UK and I'm by myself, I have anxiety the night before. I always feel anxious about traveling alone. And I am getting better because now I've done it several times. But I don't want those things. I don't want that mentality and that fear to dictate my child's life, to dictate her life. I mean, because just as you said, you men are portraying this to try to keep us safe because they know what's capable of other men.
Right.
It's like from a woman's point of view as a mother, you know, oh, make sure you do this, make sure you do that, you know, call us, keep this safe, you know, use this thing to lock your hotel room or whatever. It's the same vibe where it's like as a mother and as a female, you know what can happen to other females. And so you're trying to keep your daughter safe. And it's so important to establish more coming from a point of strength. Okay, so these are tools that can be used for your safety, to aid in the safety, to aid in, okay, like we're approaching this is simply a tool that can assist you, rather than it's like this is necessary to keep you safe. You'll be vulnerable without it.
Without it, yeah.
And so I think for me, I have a very innate, deep desire to change that story for me so that I can give my pass on and give my child, my daughter, a different story.
100%, 100%, Rachel, 100%. They, we, I say, take, we were born to take up space. Don't make yourself small for anybody. Nobody at all, and that's for you know, to all the young, anybody with daughters and young girls. And I say daughters because I specifically focus on that, but it is, I agree, for boys and sons. But I have two sons who are amazing advocates for women, and for they see me, I'm their role model as a woman, as what is and should be, and that's amazing. And yes, we do need to have generational changes with the way men think, because goodness me, I come across some real pieces of work. But that generational change for girls, it's the same for boys. It's giving them the right message as well about how they see girls, how they treat girls, how they speak to girls, how, and again, it becomes from the older generation. What information are they feeding their sons and their nephews and the younger boys in there? But it is a generation change, and it will take generations for that to change. But it's something in every one of us that we can do.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I'm like already feeling like an anthem behind me, like march, 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 march. But after talking to you, I just feel like enthused and ready to take on the whole world. And I know when people tune into this episode, they're just going to be like ready to take on anything that comes their way just by listening to you. You're such an inspiration, Goalie.
Do you know what? And all of these things, right? So we say, you know, and I believe all of the things that happen and all the journeys you go on lead you to somewhere. And I believe this is where it was meant to lead me. I believe this is where all of this was meant to come to. And I do, and this is what I do now full time. So although pharmacist, it's, I love what I do and I love my patients, but I know the impact of what we do. I know what we do saves women's lives. I know on a daily basis, right? I wake up in the morning on a daily basis and I am so humbled and I am so grateful for the privilege to do what I do, because I know what we do saves lives. And I know it changes women's lives, because every woman we have ever taught. So I'm partnered with Hopeful Handbags, a domestic violence global charity. And I know every woman's life that we touch and every woman that walks through our doors, we change the way they think, we change their mindset. And it all starts with that mindset. The physical skills are secondary. And I think when we talk about self-defense, people often get caught about, oh, but I'm not going to be fit enough and I won't be able to do this. The physical skills are secondary. Yes, we teach you the physical skills. They're a tool. And again, they are a tool. And what we teach you works. And often it's brutal, because it has to be. Because if I am up against, and I, you know, all of the things have happened, and I am up against somebody who is a foot taller than me, or almost a foot and a half taller than me, and double my body strength, I need to have all these tools at my disposal. And I will use what it takes within the law of the country that I am teaching in to do what I need to do to keep me safe. Because ultimately, my goal is I want to get home safe to my children at the end of the day. I am not there for a fight. It's not about that. But it's not about the fancy stuff. I don't need to do head kicks. I don't need to do any of that. I just need some basic tools that I need in my arsenal that are going to keep me safe. But that starts at your mindset that this is doable. And one of the things I say to the young girls I teach, your mindset always needs to be, if you are ever in that situation, that that person has picked the wrong person that day. That's your mindset. You picked the wrong person today. Not that, oh my goodness, this is me and my time is up, or I can't do anything now. They picked the wrong person. And that mindset shift, Rachel, and I'm telling you, as a 5-foot woman, that mindset change is everything.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember I have met you in person in Ireland, and I was shocked by like, oh, she really are a petite woman who's 5 foot, but you just pack a punch. You have such a strong voice and are so capable. So I could see you 100% being able to like switch into that woman. Like, you picked the wrong person today. And I mean, and I'm much taller. I'm 5'8", and probably double your body weight. And so if I encaptured that same mentality, the way that I walk, the way I talk, the way that I would communicate with people, the way I would show up for myself, show up for my daughter, my husband, at my events, on stage, all those things would be different.
It is. And we go back to that space. It's giving, honor yourself that you are worthy of being safe, honor yourself that you, and I say you are worth protecting and you are allowed to take your space upon this planet. You were brought into this world to be amazing. Don't let anybody make you small. Don't let anybody ever tell you that you can't do any of this. And it is, unfortunately, Rachel, I'm going to say again, and oh, don't get me wrong, I'm not a man hater. People say you're a man hater. I'm not. I've got two sons and I've got an amazing husband. I'm not a man hater. But we are generationally told by men that you can't, you mustn't, you shouldn't, you're not able. That's where it comes from. And if there's women in your life that are telling you that, it's because generationally they've been told by the men. And they're just passing that down because they don't know any different. But we do. We live in a time where we have information, we have knowledge, we have the capability. So it's for us to make those changes. So for do you know we're on a mission. We are on a mission with StripeNet now, and we're franchising and we're going global. We're on a mission that every woman across the planet, every female, every woman and girl, it does not matter which part of the planet you're on, and there's some really bad spaces on some of this planet, should have the skills to be able to keep herself safe from violence and from threats of violence. And that's the only way we are ever going to change the sexual attack statistics, the rape statistics, everything. When men that portray and carry out these things realize that this woman is not going to be as easy or as for me to overpower as I thought, because when these things happen, it comes from a place of control. They think this woman's going to, and I know every time I was picked on, I was profiled as somebody who was going to be easy, able to control, not gonna, I didn't look powerful, I wasn't gonna be. And we know that profiling happens. Men do profile women, that who is the easier target? Who doesn't look confident? Who doesn't look like they're gonna make a noise? Who doesn't look like they're gonna shout and fight back? The moment you look different and act different and be different, and in your mindset you are different, it will change those stats.
Absolutely. Oh, such an important message for us to put out into the world and empower young women to take back their lives and to live the most fulfilled life that they can. And it's so important. And I feel like I'm like ready to get you like doing like young children, like not just teenagers, but I'm like, oh, my 5-year-old needs this in her life. But not just that, not just the experience of Strike Back, but your messaging as well, is that there needs to be more examples in the world for young women, like my 5-year-old teenagers, to listen to about like women are powerful. Women can to protect themselves. They can do anything that they want to do. They can chase after their dreams. They can follow the paths of wherever they want to go. They can make $1 million if they want to. They can be CEOs of really large businesses. They can do anything that they want. And it's so important that girls, both teenagers and young ones, hear that messaging, because so much of society is saying just exactly the opposite. And they become like they hear. And because another thing that just popped into my head was like, until the age of 7, girls will draw scientists, both girls and boys. Then at the age of 7, all of a sudden, all the scientists are men. And that's what I'm saying. It's just really important that everyone hears your voice and what you're trying to say and what you're putting out into the world. And girls understand that they can be powerful and that's okay. And they don't need to shrink. They don't need to be small for somebody else.
to make other people feel comfortable. And we, so Rachel, you and I are both blessed because we're in a network of women who are amazing women, right? And are huge advocates for other women. But unfortunately, not everybody is. And certainly in my world, in terms of where we're talking about self-defense, there simply are not enough female self-defense instructors. And this needs to be women. For us, it needs to be women teaching women this, not a man telling me. So I've had fabulous male instructors, but it's always a man saying to me, "Oh, but this will work for you, just do it." And I'm like, "No, but it won't work for me. You're not standing in a 5 foot woman's shoes." So this is why doing what we do as an all-female school, and this is why it was important. When I say to the teen girls in my classes, who are all taller than me, trust me, they are. They literally are all taller than me. And I'm saying to them, as somebody who is 5 foot, I am telling you this works. I am not a 6 foot or a 6 foot three bloke, 16 stone telling you this works. I'm a 5 foot woman telling you this works. It's believable. It's a role model that is believable. And that is why we have this mission that we need. I know I'm run to the ground with, and Kathleen, who's over in the US, and we both said this, we cannot do this by ourselves anymore. We need an army of women who will stand up with us and say, "I want to deliver your message and teach other women to stay safe and empower other women in their own communities." And that's how this change will happen. It will literally be a sea wave of change globally where women are standing up for women in their communities to give them the tools and the skills. Because I can't do this by myself. Kathleen can't do this by herself. So I'm going to put a shout out there to women who want to stand up with us and say, "So we will give you the training to be female advocates and self-defense instructors, not just from the physical point of view, but the mindset, from the point of healing." Because women that will come to you will come from a place of trauma, many of them will come from a place of fear. And to give them that training, not just the physical skills, but the holistic skills, so they walk out different women, we need an army of women with us. So that eventually the goal and the vision is in every single city across the planet, there will be a female self-defense instructor to teach other women and girls. So no woman or girl is ever in a place where she wants to learn how to keep safe, but there's nobody there to teach her. And it has to happen. It's got, so putting it out there, this is my life's work. It has to happen. We're going to make it happen, Rachel, because if we don't, who will?
Exactly.
It's a legacy. It's a legacy of change we need to create. And we will do it. We're on a mission that we will do it. But we need amazing women who are listening out there on that podcast that are like, "Yeah, I'm feeling this," to come and join us. We will give you the training that you need. It's not tough. And I've got 70 and 8 year olds that come to my classes. You do not need to be young. You don't need to be super fit. I don't care. It doesn't matter. We need real women that other women can look at and think, "I see you in me." That's how it has to happen.
Exactly. So important, so impassioned, trying to change the world, and you absolutely will, girlie.
Oh, thank you.
One person at a time.
One breath at a time.
And I am so thankful for having you on Step Into Your Sunshine tonight today. And thank you so much for sharing your message, your experiences with all of us.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me and listening. And it is something I'm hugely passionate about. And I get very emotional because it's at the core of everything I believe in. And I feel it's so, so important. So, so important.
And we can feel it. We really can. And we can hear your conviction. Can you tell us where can we get in touch with you, Golly?
Amazing. So we are on socials. We are on across LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Instagram are on a Strike Back Defense, Facebook Strike Back Self Defense. Our website is www.strikebackselfdefense.com. So reach out on any of those platforms on LinkedIn, socials, Instagram, Facebook, where you can follow some of the work we're doing and follow the journey of the amazing women that are stepping up as instructors for us. Everyday normal women. They're special because they've stepped up. They've stepped up to make that change, and that's what makes them extraordinary. So I'm so super proud of those that have. But yeah, come and join us. Come and join our mission, our vision, and be that army of women that's going to make that global change.
You've heard her. Go and check her out. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have new episodes every Monday and Thursday at 8, and I look forward to chatting with you soon.